Ew. He chewed and shrugged, taking much too long to answer for Leo's liking.
It was more what she didn't do. Sometimes she was all lovey-dovey, but other times she was about as warm toward Holly as a frozen mackerel.
Leo remembered what Holly had told her about Dana, that they had been fighting about Holly's lack of desire for her all the time. Damn. Dana had probably given her the cold shoulder and withdrawn any affection whenever Holly hadn't wanted to sleep with her. Was that what she thought Leo would do if they got involved? The thought hurt and made her angry and sad all at the same time. She gulped down the rest of her beer while Ethan hadn't even finished half of his.
You okay?
He asked.
Yeah, but I think it's time to go home.
She put enough money for the sandwich and their beers on the bar.
If you see your sister, tell her. Tell her what?
He waited, his beer halfway to his mouth. Leo shook her head.
Nothing.
She had to stop avoiding direct conversations. Whatever she wanted to say to Holly, she had to do it herself, if she ever figured out what to say. Holly didn't know how long she sat there, just staring at the bend in the path where Leo had disappeared. Her ears buzzed, and it wasn't from the gurgling of the creek next to her. Finally, she lowered her gaze to the picnic Leo had so lovingly prepared. Her eyes started to burn, and for a moment she wanted to toss it all after the wine into the creek. But she knew she couldn't bring herself to do that. Neither would she let herself curl up into a ball in the middle of all the food. She had done what needed to be done. It would be better in the long run, even if it didn't feel that way at the moment. Now she needed to move on with her life, starting with figuring out what to do with this food. She slid her fingers over every container as she put them back into the basket. God, Leo had put so much thought into this. There was even the smoked Gouda she liked so much. How had Leo found out about it? Stop it. You're just torturing yourself. She packed up the rest of the picnic, then slid off her sandals and waded into the creek, hoping to locate the bottle of wine. But she couldn't find it and gave up the search after a few minutes. It was gone. Like Leo. Ignoring her morose thoughts and her wet feet, she put her sandals back on and climbed over the rocks, back to the path. She gave Mr. Gillespie a nod in passing, but marched on instead of stopping to chat, the basket tightly gripped in both hands. What was she supposed to do with it? Return it to Leo? She had a feeling that wouldn't go over too well. Eating whatever she could wasn't an option either, because the mere thought of food made her stomach churn, but she didn't want Leo's picnic to spoil. Finally, she decided to take it to her mother's. Ethan and Zack and their kids stopped by almost every day, and with that hungry brood around, no food ever went to waste. Holly had a key, so she let herself in. Some days she still expected her father to greet her when she stepped into the house. God, what she wouldn't give to be able to sink into one of his warm embraces right now. Leo didn't appreciate what a blessing it was to still have her father around.
Would you finally stop thinking about her?
That was fast, her mother said behind her.
Holly jumped and whirled, clutching the basket to her chest.
Mom, I didn't know you were home. I was just about to leave a note.
Her mother came closer.
No grumpy cats to deal with today, so we closed on time for once. But what are you doing here?
I brought some food for the kids.
Holly held up the basket.
Leftovers from the picnic with Leontine?
How did you know?
A little birdie told me.
Her mother put on a mysterious smile, but couldn't keep it up.
Okay, it was Phil Eads. He came in with his Rottweiler mix earlier and said he heard Leontine and Jenny talk about it in the store. So, how did it go?
Well...
Holly followed her mother to the kitchen, where she put down the basket.
She and you, is it serious between the two of you?
Her mother's eyes shone.
Is that why you were talking about happy endings the other day?
It won't work out.
Saying it out loud was harder than she had expected.
Why wouldn't it? Is it because she's a pop star?
Her mother asked.
I admit that had me a little worried too, but then I figured she's still Gilbert and Sharon's daughter, you know. The little girl who got a rock stuck in her nose when she was 3.
Holly managed a small smile.
That's not it. I mean, it's part of it.
She rubbed her face with both hands.
Leo will go back to New York in her career soon.
Her mother pulled out 2 chairs in the breakfast nook, pressed her down onto one, and took a seat on the other.
But you knew that before you agreed to go on a date with her, didn't you?
Yeah, but...
So there has to be something about her that made you say yes anyway.
I...
Holly put her elbows on the table, leaned her forehead into her palms, and buried her fingers in her hair.
I didn't think it through.
Well, there usually isn't much thinking going on when you're in love, or at least in lust.
The corners of her mother's mouth curled into an amused smile. It certainly hadn't been Holly's libido that had overwhelmed her common sense.
But I don't think I'm in love with Leo either. Am I? More like a little crush, right? Okay, a pretty big one.
Why not try a long-distance relationship?
Her mother asked.
I know they're not easy, but they can work out. Your father lived in Kansas City when we met.
That's hardly a long-distance relationship.
Her mother shrugged.
If you're yearning to be together, even 100 miles feels like a long distance. Why not give it a try? There's not exactly a wide choice of lesbians in Fair Oaks. The only one I know is Mrs. Verster, and she's 81.
Mrs. Verster?
Holly nearly burst out laughing, despite her gloomy mood.
What makes you think she's a lesbian?
Well, she's got one of those rainbow flag stickers on her bumper.
She probably just thinks they're nice and colorful and has no idea what they mean.
Well, she might not be a lesbian, but you are. And that means if you don't want to be alone for the rest of your life, you'll have to take a risk on someone from out of town at some point.
She studied Holly with an intense motherly gaze.
Doesn't it?
Holly bent her head and rubbed her neck with one hand.
I don't know, Mom. In my experience, taking risks doesn't pay off.
Her mother reached across the table and took her free hand.
Who hurt you so much?
It came out thickly, as if she could barely speak because she was so overwhelmed. Holly shook her head.
It's not...
It was Dana, wasn't it? You haven't brought anyone home since her. God, Holly, I'm so sorry we weren't there for you back then.
You were.
Not the way we should have been. But we weren't ready, and then your father... The accident happened, and...
Holly squeezed her mother's hands with both of hers.
It's okay.
No, it's not.
Why don't you ever talk to me about this part of your life?
We talk about everything else. Why not this, too?
Because there's nothing to talk about.
That might have been true before Leontine came back.
Her mother sent her an imploring gaze.
Honey, I know I wasn't exactly a P-flag mother of the year at first, but I'm really trying.
I know, Mom. It's not because I don't trust you, it's just complicated.
Her mother sighed.
All right. Just know that I'm here for you whenever you want to talk.
Thanks, Mom. Maybe another time.
As she rose to give her mother a hug, a thought crossed her mind. Was she doing what she had accused Leo of doing? Was she coming up with every excuse under the sun to avoid a serious conversation with her mother? The sun was slowly setting by the time Leo made it home. She had hoped to escape to her room without anyone in the house seeing her, but as soon as she opened the door, her mother stepped out of the kitchen.
Back from your picnic so soon?
Yeah.
She didn't want to lie, but neither did she want to discuss the reasons. Thankfully, her mother didn't push.
Is Holly on baby monitor duty tonight?
Leo asked.
No, didn't she mention it during the picnic? It's my turn to keep an eye on him.
At least that meant she didn't have to see Holly tonight. She walked past her mother to the stairs, but then did a double take. Boy, her mother looked like shit. Constant worry had engraved lines on her face, and she moved as if she was bone tired. Had she lost more weight recently, or had she looked like this for the past 4 weeks and Leo just hadn't noticed?
Damn.
It hurt to admit it, but Holly had been right. Not about her spending time with Holly just so she could avoid dealing with her father. She honestly liked Holly and enjoyed every minute they spent together. But there was a kernel of truth in what she'd said. Leo had avoided dealing with her father. With both of her parents, really. Just one more week in Fair Oaks, then she'd be gone for good. At least for the next few years, if her track record held up. Just 7 more days to prove Holly wrong. But it was hard. She opened her mouth, closed it, and opened it again.
Yes?
Her mother said.
What is it?
She licked her lips. Her gaze flicked to the stairs leading to her room. No. She squared her shoulders. I can take over the night shift tonight if you want. Her mother stared at her as if she had said she were pregnant with triplets.
You want to keep an eye on your father?
Leo shrugged as casually as possible, pretending it was no big deal, but she sensed that she wasn't pulling it off.
Yeah, why not?
You don't have to do that.
Yes,
Leo said, her voice wavering a little.
I think I do.
Her mother crossed the distance between them faster than Leo had thought her capable of. She threw her arms around Leo and squeezed tightly.
Thank you, she whispered against her shoulder. Thank you for trying.
Leo laughed shakily and held her for a moment.
Don't thank me yet. Dad and I might end up killing each other, leaving you to deal with the bodies.
Her mother giggled, sounding giddy and nervous at the same time.
That's a risk I'll gladly take, if only...
She didn't finish her sentence, but the weight of her expectations settled heavily on Leo's shoulders nonetheless. After another moment, they both let go and stepped back. Leo cleared her throat.
So, what do I do? On night shift, I mean.
Thanks to his occupational therapist, your dad has gotten pretty good at handling most things himself. You'll need to help him to the bathroom and back, but he can wash up by himself if you push him up to the sink.
Phew.
At least that would spare them both some embarrassment.
That's it?
Make sure he brushes his teeth. That's a little hard for him with his left hand.
Okay.
I can do that, I think.
Oh, and take his blood sugar before he goes to sleep. Do you remember how?
Her father had suffered from diabetes all of his life, so Leo had watched him prick his finger and measure his blood sugar level 1,000 times. She nodded.
What about the insulin?
He's got a pump now, so no more injections. Are you sure you want to do this? I could easily...
No, it's okay. You go get some rest. I'll handle things down here.
Are you sure?
Her mother asked again. Leo forced a smile.
You know what I said about you having to deal with our bodies was a joke, right?
A faint smile ghosted across her mother's tense face.
All right. I know you'll take good care of him. Give me a minute to say goodnight, and then he's all yours.
It didn't take long until she returned. She raised up on her tiptoes, kissed Leo's cheek, and then climbed the stairs. Leo watched her take each step slowly, as if she either didn't have enough energy to walk any faster or was still hesitant to leave her alone with him. When the bedroom door clicked closed behind her mother, Leo straightened and rubbed her damp palms against each other. All right. Now she had to put her money where her mouth was. Her legs felt like rubber as she walked toward her father's room. God, she hadn't been this nervous before her concert at Madison Square Garden.
Calm down. It's just your father.
But that thought didn't calm her nerves any more than the thought of a lion waiting behind that door would. She gave herself a mental kick and knocked. A grunt came from inside the room. She took it to mean, please come in, and opened the door. As she entered, she realized how little time she had spent in this room during the past 4 weeks. Another indication that Holly had been right. Her father was in his wheelchair, in front of his stereo, flipping through a stack of CDs. He didn't stop or look up when she came in.
Time for bed, she said.
Wow, that was weird. He had said the same to her 1,000 times when she'd been a child. This role reversal would take some getting used to. He put the CDs down, turned, and craned his neck.
Mom?
For a moment, she thought he was confusing her with his long-dead mother, but Holly had assured her that his memory wasn't affected. He was asking for her mom, not his own. She walked over and swiveled his wheelchair so he was facing her.
Didn't she tell you? I'll be helping you tonight.
He glowered at her.
No.
Why did he have to make this so hard on her? She folded her arms across her chest.
It's me or handling everything yourself. Mom needs some rest.
They faced each other in a silent stare down. Knowing her father, they would still be here without either of them giving in when the sun rose, so Leo grabbed the handles of his wheelchair and pushed him toward the bathroom. He let out a growl.
Drunk.
She stopped. Her hands slid off the wheelchair handles. What?
Drunk,
he repeated more clearly, and put his good hand on the wheel so she couldn't keep pushing. Damn. That man was like a human alcohol detector. He'd been the same on prom night when she had come home tipsy and babbling about kissing Ash. But that had been 14 years ago. She was no longer that smitten girl, and she wasn't drunk. She circled the wheelchair to glare at him.
Can you stop with the holier-than-thou attitude for once? I'm an adult, and all I had was one beer and a shot. Not all pop stars are alcoholics and drug addicts, you know.
He said nothing, but at least he took his hand off the wheel. She pushed him through the sliding door and into the bathroom. Her parents had used some of the money she had sent them to turn the half-bath into a full bathroom with a walk-in shower, and she'd had a new sink installed shortly after returning home. It was lower than the old one, providing easy access from the wheelchair. The toilet seat was elevated, and safety handles covered the walls next to it so he could get in and out of his wheelchair on his own. She parked his chair close to the toilet.
Do you want some help?
He firmly shook his head.
All right, I'll be right outside. Call me when you're done and I'll help you wash up. Stop,
he said before she could reach the door. She turned.
Yes? Stop,
he said again.
I did stop. I'm not doing a thing. Stop!
He gestured at the wheelchair in sweeping, impatient motions.
Put stop.
What the hell was he trying to tell her? Once again, they were staring at each other, unable to communicate.
Story of my life. Stop!
He repeated, nearly shouting now, as if speaking louder would help her understand. He drummed his good hand against the armrest. Sweat started to pool along her spine. Was this how parents felt when their toddler threw a tantrum? She just hoped her mother didn't hear this ruckus and hurry downstairs to make sure they weren't really killing each other.
I don't understand what... Oh!
Shit. She had forgotten to set the brake on the wheelchair. With burning cheeks, she bent and did it. Sorry, she mumbled and ducked out of the bathroom as fast as possible. Outside, she buried her face in her hands. God, how did Holly do this every day? She herself sure as hell wasn't cut out to be a nurse. No wonder her mother looked exhausted. Taking care of him 3 or 4 nights a week wasn't any less stressful than a world tour with a concert every other day. She leaned against the wall and listened to the sounds drifting through the door, which she'd left ajar. The toilet flushed. Then he groaned, and she heard him shuffle across the tiles on one leg, probably dragging himself back into the wheelchair.
"Do you need some help?" she called. "No,"
he grunted out. A frustrated growl echoed through the tiled room.
"Dad?"
She peeked into the bathroom. He had somehow managed to get back into the wheelchair and to take off his shirt, but now he was struggling to unlock the brakes. She squeezed past him and unlocked them. Ignoring his scowl, she pushed him over to the sink and squeezed out a bit of toothpaste for him. He sent her a glare in the mirror before starting to brush his teeth. It looked like a chore with his left hand, and he took the toothbrush out of his mouth after less than a minute.
3 minutes, she said.
Again, that feeling of role reversal swept over her.
Remember how you used to play a 3-minute song for me when I was learning to brush my teeth on my own?
She hadn't thought about it in many years. He stopped glaring. For a second, his expression softened. Then he frowned and put the toothbrush back into his mouth. Finally, he was done. She waited while he washed his face and hands, and then she returned him to his room. This time, she even remembered to set the brake when she parked the wheelchair next to the bed. With a little help from her, he struggled out of his shorts, slid into bed, and exhaled, looking as relieved as Leo felt. Now she just had to take his blood sugar and they'd be done. She got the blood sugar kit from his bedside table and unzipped it. The device was a new one, not the one she was familiar with from her teenage years, but she figured it would work the same. She inserted a test strip into the glucometer and watched its screen light up before setting it aside. Gently, she pressed the lancing device against the side of her father's finger, where it was less sensitive. A leathery pad covered its tip, not quite like her thicker guitar calluses, but still very familiar. She had watched these hands play the violin and the piano more often than she could count. Now he would likely never play again. Without warning, a wave of grief and compassion swept over her. She sat there clutching his finger and biting her lip.
"Press,"
her father said.
"Yeah, I know."
She pressed the button. The needle shot out and pricked his finger. He didn't flinch. For a second, she stared at the drop of dark red blood on his fingertip before holding it against the test strip jutting out of the blood sugar device. They stared down at the small display. It seemed to take forever until the result popped up. 107. She blew out a breath. That meant his blood sugar level was just fine, and she didn't need to call her mother, or worse, Holly, to ask for help. She wrapped the used test strip in a tissue, zipped the blood sugar kit up, and put it back on the bedside table. Everything was done now, but something inside her urged her not to go. Not without trying to talk to him. But when she turned back toward him, he had closed his eyes, either because he was exhausted or as a signal that he didn't want to talk. Okay, she had tried her best. It obviously wasn't meant to be.
Really?
A voice in her head piped up, sounding very much like Holly's.
You're giving up this easily?
She hovered at his bedside. Dad, she said quietly.
Can we talk?
He opened his eyes and waved at his head with a grimace.
Yeah, I know you can't talk very well. But can you listen?
He sighed, pulled himself up a little with the use of the triangle dangling down from above his hospital bed, and gestured toward his wheelchair.
Seat.
Her heart pounded wildly, as if she were facing a firing squad, not merely her father. She plopped down into the wheelchair and sat there for quite some time, searching for the right words. After all these years, where should she start? Finally, she decided to keep it short because she didn't have nerve to draw this out.
I know you had my entire life mapped out before I could even talk. Juilliard, getting a Bachelor of Music, playing in a symphony, maybe marrying a fellow musician and raising the next generation of little Mozarts.
He gave her a look that clearly said, "What's wrong with that?"
"Nothing's wrong with that," she answered. "It's a fine goal, but not for me. I'm not you, Dad. I'm not straight, and I'm not into classical music. I want different things. But just because they're different doesn't mean they're worse than what you want for me. Can you accept that?"
His eyebrows lowered. He reached out his good hand from beneath the thin sheet, gripped Leo's left hand, and rasped his thumb over her fingertips.
"Gentle,"
he said with a dismissive shake of his head.
"No."
He stared off to the side as he obviously searched for the right word.
Soft.
Leo looked down at their hands. Slowly, she zeroed in on her fingertips. The calluses on her fretting hand had gotten soft because she hadn't played the guitar in the past 4 weeks.
Yeah, I'm taking a break from playing right now. What does that have to do with what I just said?
Not, know the, want.
Leo ran the words backward and forward to figure out what he meant. Finally, it clicked.
You mean I don't know what I want?
He nodded firmly.
You, know. You play.
If I knew, I would play?
Another nod. He held her gaze, his chin raised in a silent challenge. Her first instinct was to argue with him or storm out. But that would be just more of the same, avoiding a serious conversation. As much as she hated to admit it, she knew deep down that he was right. She wasn't playing her guitar anymore, because it was a symbol of her career, which she wasn't sure she wanted anymore. Oh, damn. That insight wasn't what she had wanted to get from this conversation. She tried to roll the wheelchair closer to the bed, but the brakes were set, so it didn't move. With a grunt, she shoved it over to the spot she wanted.
Okay. I might not know exactly what I want, but I do know what I don't want. I don't want to play the violin. I don't want to join a symphony. I don't want to marry some guy.
I don't want to be here had been part of the list up until a few weeks ago, but now she wasn't so sure any longer.
Fine.
He waved his hand dismissively and turned his head away.
No, Dad!
She jumped up and moved around the bed and into his line of sight so he was forced to look at her.
It's not fine with you at all, is it? Come on, at least admit it. You never had a problem stuffing your opinion down my throat in the past.
Again, he turned his head to the other side, but this time, not before Leo had glimpsed the look in his eyes. It wasn't anger or resentment, as she had expected. Frustration was a big part of it, sure, but what she had seen was mostly something else. She knew that look. She had recently seen it on Holly's face when they had argued. Hurt. Dejection, resignation, fear of being hurt again. Was it possible? Had he thought she was rejecting him as a father, a musician, a teacher, and a man, when she had declared that she didn't want the things he valued most in life, his music and his family? She crossed back to the other side of the bed. He closed his eyes.
Sleep.
In a second. Please, Dad, look at me.
He huffed out a breath but opened his eyes. She perched on the side of his bed.
You know that this, me being a lesbian and not wanting to become a violinist, has nothing to do with you, don't you?
He stared at her with a stony expression, but something in his eyes flickered.
Being gay isn't a choice, Dad. It has nothing to do with rebelling against you or rejecting you or not wanting to be like you. It's the way I am. And there's nothing I or you can do to change it.
Music,
he said, his tone challenging.
Yeah, okay, that was a choice. But pop is still music.
Her father lifted one brow. Leo had to think of the way Holly had explained asexuality to her, using her chocolate metaphor, and both of them agreeing that white chocolate wasn't chocolate at all. Apparently, her father felt the same way about pop music.
It is, she said firmly. I'm a musician just like you are. Think about it this way, I could have become a porn star.
His brow arched even higher.
All right, maybe not a porn star. I could have become a waitress, a hairdresser, or a mechanic. But I didn't. I chose to be a pop singer. Is that really so bad? It still gives us something in common. We both love music. Can't that be a start?
He lifted the shoulder on his good side in a semi-shrug. That was all she was going to get after pouring her heart out? She gave him an incredulous stare. Just when she was about to get up and walk out, he cleared his throat and labored to get out a word.
Women.
He waved back and forth between them, and a ghost of a smile darted across his usually stoic face, lending it a much softer appearance.
Two things.
God, what wouldn't she give for a translator? I don't understand.
The lines on his forehead deepened. He repeated the motion with his hand.
Two things. Music. Women.
You.
Her breath caught. Was he pointing out the two things they had in common? Music and women? She stared at him. Was she imagining things, or had he just cracked a joke about her sexual orientation? Not a homophobic one, but a joke that hinted at acceptance. The corner of his mouth twitched.
Unbelievable.
He had been joking. Her strict, overbearing father had joked about her sexual orientation as something that might unite them instead of stand between them. Jesus Christ! Laughter bubbled up from deep inside her. She pressed a hand to her mouth and realized what she was struggling to hold back wasn't laughter. It was a sob that wanted to escape her chest. Don't. This might be a beginning, but it was too fragile to burden it with tears. She fisted a handful of the sheet and took several calming breaths to get herself back under control.
Fine,
he asked, and for an instant she saw the gentleness that he had sometimes shown her when she'd been a little girl and he had guided her hands over the strings of the violin. She inhaled and exhaled again.
Yeah, I'm fine. Are you really okay with me being a lesbian? With me being everything I am?
Not. Don't. Don't. Change.
He gave that half shrug again. She nodded her understanding. He didn't particularly like it, but accepted that he couldn't change it. I guess it's a start. It was certainly more than she had ever expected to hear from him. When she got up from the bed, she felt as if she could float out of the room. A decades-old weight was finally starting to lift off her chest. She stood next to his bed and peered down at him for several moments, wanting to say something but not knowing what. That must be what he felt like when he struggled for words. Finally, she gave up, and instead bent to kiss his cheek. He put on a gruff expression, but his gaze was soft. It followed her to the door, where she turned and looked back at him. They nodded at each other. Then he pulled the sheet higher and closed his eyes.
Good night, she said softly.
Blowing out a shuddery breath, she picked up the baby monitor receiver and tiptoed out. The first thing that went through her mind was that she wanted to call Holly and tell her everything. But things between them were over. Were they even still friends? Did she want to be after she had opened herself up, only to get dumped? It was a moot point anyway. She didn't have Holly's number.
Hell, how's that possible?
They had shared a lot of very intimate information, but not their phone numbers? Instead of trudging upstairs and brooding over Holly and the unceremonious end of their relationship, she resolved to do something that she had avoided for the past month. Unpacking her suitcase, even if it was only for another week. Chapter 15 Birdsong and the pale light of dawn woke Leo. She had slept fitfully, tossing and turning with thoughts of Holly. Their argument at the creek played through her mind on a loop. Finally, she had fallen asleep about 2 hours ago. Unlike Leo, her father seemed to have slept peacefully. There hadn't even been the slightest peep through the receiver of the baby monitor. Well, at least that part of her life had taken a turn for the better after she had gathered the courage to have a conversation with her father. Maybe she and Holly could do the same. She would leave in just another week, and she didn't want their last few days together to end with them not talking. Truth be told, she didn't want them to end at all. She wanted to get to know Holly better. Maybe she could surprise her with breakfast to make up for the picnic she had abandoned yesterday, and they could talk and clear the air between them. At the very least, she wanted to tell Holly that she'd been right about one of the two things she'd said at the creek, and dead wrong about the other. With that thought in mind, she climbed out of bed before sunrise. A rooster crowed somewhere in town as she made her way downstairs. She grinned at herself. Now she was getting up with the roosters. If she stayed here much longer, there was no telling what other local habits she would take up. The house was quiet, so her mother was probably still asleep. She really must have been exhausted. Leo opened her father's bedroom door a few inches and peeked inside. He was still asleep, too. She started to withdraw, but something made her pause. Something was off. Goosebumps rose on her arms, and the tiny hairs stood on end. It took her a moment to figure out what had triggered her sixth sense. Her father was breathing weirdly, deep, but much too fast for peaceful sleep. As she watched, his breathing slowed and became shallow, and then it just stopped. Panic flooded her. Dad! She rushed into the room. Before she reached him, he started breathing again. Her knees went weak with relief. Jesus, don't scare me like that. She shook his shoulder to wake him. He didn't move, just his chest continued to rise and fall in a slowing pattern. Dad! She shook him again. Please, please, wake up! Nothing. Phone. Call 911. She fumbled around on his bedside table, but found only the baby monitor and his blood sugar kit. In a burst of speed, she took the stairs three at a time. Mom! She shouted at the top of her lungs. Wake up! It's Dad! We need an ambulance! Not waiting to see if her mother would wake up, she snatched up her phone. Her hands shook so much that she could barely dial 911. As the phone rang, she raced back downstairs to her father's side. For a second, his chest seemed to have stopped moving, but then the fast, deep breath started again. She gasped for breath along with him.
911, what's your emergency?
The dispatcher said in a calm, practiced tone.
It's my father. I can't wake him and he's breathing weirdly. I need you to send someone, now!
Calm down, ma'am.
Calm down? How could she calm down when her father was... She swallowed and refused to even think it.
Can you confirm your location, ma'am?
She rattled off her parents' address, hoping she wasn't getting it wrong in her blind panic.
Hurry, please!
Okay, help is on the way, the dispatcher said. I'll stay on the line with you until the ambulance arrives.
Her mother stumbled into the room in her nightgown.
Oh, God, Gilbert!
She hurried to his side.
What happened?
I don't know. He was like this when I came in.
Every second ticked by painfully slow as they stared down at him, unable to help. Tires crunched over the gravel outside. The ambulance. She pressed the phone into her mother's hand, rushed through the hall, and tore open the door. But it wasn't an ambulance parked in the driveway. It was a red Jeep.
Holly.
Leo nearly sank to her knees. Holly was a nurse. She could help. The cold prickle of sweat along her back slowly receded.
Holly was here. Everything would be okay.
Holly parked her Jeep in the driveway and grabbed the paper bag with the scones. Now that she was here, she wasn't so sure that showing up this early had been a good idea. Leo was probably still asleep, and even if she wasn't, what was there to say? Nothing had changed, after all. They still lived in different states and still had different expectations in a relationship.
That doesn't mean we can't be friends.
Even though she'd convinced herself it was better not to try a relationship with her, she didn't want to lose Leo entirely. It wasn't that she didn't have other friends. She did, and she loved spending time with them. But that couldn't compare to what she had felt when she had climbed up onto the roof with Leo, dangled her feet in the creek with her, or snuck into the kitchen for a glass of milk and some middle-of-the-night conversation. She wanted more of this feeling, whatever it was. And she wanted to apologize. She had hurt Leo with her back and forth of emotions and actions, first kissing her and agreeing to date her, and then telling her she'd changed her mind. The memory of the look on Leo's face down at the creek had kept her up all night. With a lump in her throat, she got out of the Jeep and closed the driver's side door. Before she took the first step toward the house, she realized that the front door stood open and someone was on the porch. Leo. Their gazes met across the car's roof. A hesitant smile tugged on Holly's lips. It spread across her face as Leo rushed toward her. Apparently, Leo wasn't just willing to talk. She had obviously missed Holly, too. But Leo wasn't smiling. Her eyes were wide with panic.
Holly, it's my dad. He's not waking up.
She grabbed her hand and pulled Holly after her into the house. Holly dropped the bag of scones onto the hall table, praying with all her might that this emergency wasn't what she thought it was. She gently nudged Sharon aside and shook Gil's shoulder. Nothing. Not even a moan from him.
Oh, God, Gil.
For a moment, panic threatened to grip her, but then her training took over. Have you called 911? Leo nodded.
They're on their way.
She took the phone from her mother and lifted it to her ear.
Holly's here, my father's nurse. Yep, she's already doing that.
While Leo and Sharon anxiously hovered next to her, Holly bent over him and checked his blood pressure, his heart rate, and his pupils. One of them was dilated, and his breathing pattern indicated chain Stokes respiration.
Damn, damn, damn. That's so not good.
She reached for the blood glucose meter on the bedside table.
You think it's low blood sugar?
Leo asked. Holly had a feeling it was something else, but she didn't want to worry them unnecessarily.
It's worth checking. Could you get me another pillow?
She wanted to raise his torso a little to make sure he didn't aspirate on his own saliva. It would also give Leo something to do while they waited for the ambulance. Leo rushed off. Just as Holly was about to take his blood sugar, the sound of sirens grew louder and then stopped in the driveway. Sharon ran to let them in. Seconds later, she returned with the two EMTs. Leo trailed after them, pillow in hand. Holly blew out a breath. She knew them both. Gil would be in good hands. She gave them Gil's vitals, then stepped out of the way and joined Leo and Sharon at the foot of the bed. Quietly, she slid her hand into Leo's. Her fingers were damp, and she clutched Holly's fingers tightly, as if holding on for dear life.
"Looks like a stroke to me," Holly said to the EMTs. "He's had two already, one last year, the other 3 months ago."
With efficient movements, the EMTs repeated her checks. Vicky, the female EMT, attached EKG patches to Gil's chest and hooked him up to a cardiac monitor, while her colleague clipped a pulse oximeter to his finger and measured his blood glucose. It was a little on the low side, but not low enough to make him lose consciousness.
"How long has he been like this?" Vicky asked.
Holly looked at Leo.
"I don't know. He was like this when I tried to wake him a few minutes ago."
Leo glanced at her wrist, but she wasn't wearing a watch.
"He seemed just fine last night when I put him to bed around 9, and I didn't hear anything from him all night."
Leo had put him to bed and kept an eye on the baby monitor? Holly stared at her for a moment. But it didn't matter right now. More important was the fact that he hadn't woken her once during the night.
"He usually has to get up at least once during the night," she said to the EMTs.
They traded knowing gazes before lifting Gil onto a gurney and strapping him into place. Within seconds, they had wheeled him out and through the open doors of the waiting ambulance. Sharon, Leo, and Holly hurried after them.
"Can one of us ride with him?"
Leo called, still clutching Holly's hand while wrapping her free arm around her mother. Vicky shook her head.
"We'll probably end up airlifting him to St. Luke's."
St. Luke's? The hospital had a first-class stroke unit. so they were thinking what Holly was thinking. If this was a massive stroke, as she suspected, the local hospital couldn't do much for him, and the window of opportunity for a clot-busting drug was rapidly closing. They had to act fast, and taking a family member with them would only slow them down. She wrapped one arm around Leo's waist and made eye contact with Vicky.
"We'll meet you there. You still have my number?"
Vicky nodded.
"Let me know where you're taking him as soon as you know."
"Will do."
Seconds later, the ambulance doors closed behind her, and the ambulance sped down the street, sirens blaring and lights flashing. Leo stood in the middle of the driveway and stared after them as if she still hadn't grasped what had happened. Holly gently chafed Leo's hand between both of hers. Now that the ambulance with Gil had left, she slowly shifted out of nurse mode. Her knees started to tremble. Leo turned to face her. The numb expression on her face gave way to fear.
"He seemed fine last night, I swear he... Oh God, what if he..."
"He'll be fine,"
Sharon whispered like a mantra.
"He'll be fine."
Then she burst into tears. The three of them came together for a desperate group hug in the middle of the driveway. Leo's trim body, which normally exuded such confidence, now trembled and felt fragile against her. With one hand, Holly rubbed circles over her back until she felt the tense muscles relax a little.
"Come on," she finally said. "Let's get you two inside."
Still holding on to each other, with Leo in the middle, they made their way to the house. Chapter 16. In Leo's experience, hospital waiting rooms were the same all over the Western world, and the one in St. Luke's emergency room was no different. Same hard plastic chairs, same smell of disinfectant and cleaner, same sense of fear and sorrow. Leo peered over at Holly, who sat next to her, still holding her hand. Had she been sitting in a waiting room like this after her father's accident, too? Did this remind her of that horrible day? But if Holly was thinking of the past, she gave no indication of it. Her attention was firmly on Leo.
"Want me to get you a coffee or something from the vending machine?"
She looked from Leo to her mother. Both shook their heads.
"No, thanks."
The last thing Leo needed was for the caffeine to make her even more jittery. She could barely sit still as it was. For the fifth time in as many minutes, she glanced up to the large wall clock, whose hands seemed to barely move. Why was no one coming to let them know what was happening? A CT scan shouldn't take this long, should it? She wished someone would turn off the television mounted in the corner. Some soap opera played with the sound off, ignored by the handful of people in the waiting room. Her mother's shoes squeaked on the linoleum as she paced back and forth. Leo leaned forward and put her elbows on her thighs without letting go of Holly's hand. It was her lifeline in all this chaos.
"I'm sorry about before."
She wasn't sure why she was thinking about it now, but the words bubbled out of her.
"I don't want you to think I'm a person who throws things if she doesn't get what she wants. That's not who I am."
"I know."
Holly caressed her fingers with her thumb. Her forearm rested on Leo's thigh next to her arm.
"I was just as much to blame, but it's not important right now. Let's focus on your father, okay?"
For a moment, Leo wanted to lift her hand to her mouth and press a kiss to her palm. She was so insanely grateful to Holly that there were no words for it.
"I didn't hear him," she whispered. "Last night, I never heard him. What if he called for me or screamed out and I slept through it?
Look at me."
Holly tugged on her hand until Leo raised her gaze to her eyes.
"You did nothing wrong. It could have happened on any other night when your mother or I kept an eye on him, and we wouldn't have heard a thing either. None of this is your fault. None. Do you hear me?"
Leo nodded, but a few what-ifs still clung to her mind like stubborn cobwebs. It would take some time until she could shake off the last remainder of doubt. A scrub-clad doctor pushed through the set of swinging doors. His gaze swept over the people in the waiting room.
"Mrs. Blake?"
Her mother stopped pacing, even seemed to stop breathing.
That's me. How is he?
Leo shot to her feet. Holly jumped up with her, their fingers still linked. The doctor cleared his throat.
As you probably guessed, your husband suffered another stroke.
But he'll be fine, right?
Leo's mother asked.
He's survived two strokes already. He'll make it through this one, too, right?
Mrs. Blake, this one was much worse than the others. There's substantial swelling in his brain, and it's putting pressure on the brainstem, the part of the brain that regulates important life functions such as his breathing and heart rate.
He cut himself off as if realizing they were too overwhelmed to grasp all the details.
We don't expect him to recover from that.
Not recover?
Leo's mother stammered.
What does that mean? Will he die?
I'm sorry, we're doing all we can, but the odds of survival are very remote. You should prepare for the worst. I don't think he has long.
Leo swayed, feeling as if he had punched her. She gripped Holly's hand to stay upright. Her mother burst into sobs, grabbed Leo in a desperate hug, and buried her face against her shoulder. Warm tears soaked Leo's shirt. She let go of Holly and wrapped both arms around her mother. The doctor met her gaze over her mother's head. His face was a professional mask, but compassion shone in his eyes.
We'll be sending him up to the stroke unit in a minute. You can stay with him if you want to.
Leo couldn't speak, but Holly did it for her.
Thank you. We'd like that.
The door swung shut behind the doctor, but his words continued to echo through Leo's mind.
I don't think he has long.
She pressed her hand to her mouth.
He will die. Oh, God, he will die.
Her father's hospital room looked like the bridge of a spaceship. A large monitor dominated the space at the head of his bed, and Leo couldn't look away from the green and white lines moving across the screen in a hypnotizing pattern. Constantly changing numbers were displayed next to them, but they meant little to her. A breathing tube was taped to her father's mouth, but there was none of the hissing, pumping, and beeping she had expected. This wasn't like the scenes she had seen on TV at all. An eerie silence filled the room, interrupted every now and then by the shrill alarm of a monitor in one of the other rooms. Leo almost wished for more sounds, anything to distract her from the unmoving figure in the bed. Her mother was talking to him, stroking his pale face around the breathing tube and kissing his forehead, but he never reacted. This was what she'd expected when she had first gotten her mother's call 4 weeks ago. Now, after she had talked to her father just last night, it caught her unawares. Part of her still couldn't grasp that the patient lying motionless beneath the white hospital blanket was him. The only thing that felt real was Holly's presence. Since there were only two visitors' chairs, she stood behind Leo like a guardian angel, one hand on Leo's shoulder.
"You can hold his hand if you want,"
Holly whispered to her. Leo glanced back at her. Holly gave her an encouraging nod. A clip was attached to his finger on the right, measuring the oxygen in his blood or something, and her mother had a careful grasp on that hand, so Leo took hold of the other. Somehow she had expected his skin to be warm, as it had always been, but now it was cool against her own. A shiver went through her. Holly rubbed her shoulder, sending a bit of warmth back into her. Grateful, Leo reached up with her other hand and put it on Holly's for a moment. She sat very still, watching his shrunken face. When was the last time she had held his hand like this? Had she ever? She must have as a child, but she couldn't remember. Her mother slid her chair closer to the bed and reached across his lap for Leo's other hand. Leo let go of Holly's hand to hold her mother's. Her fingers were warm, especially in comparison to his. Tears trickled down her mother's face, but she didn't reach up to wipe them away. One, then another, dripped onto the stark white sheet. Leo's heart went out to her mother, but no tears came for her. This was all too surreal. She didn't even know what time of day it was or how long they had been in here. The blinds on the large window were down, shutting out the rest of the world. It might as well have ceased to exist for all she knew.
"If you want, you could play him some music," Holly said quietly.
Grateful for anything that would interrupt the awful silence, Leo fumbled her cell phone from her pocket and searched for Pachelbel's Canon in D. Soon, the low, soothing strains of violins filled the room. She sat there for what felt like hours, but could easily have been minutes. Her father's hand and hers seemed to become cooler, and the numbers on the monitor fell, slowly but steadily.
"Dad,"
she heard her own voice croak out, as if that could call him back from where he was going. A muscle twitched in his face. Had he heard her?
"Dad,"
she tried again. Wasn't it ironic? Except for last night, they hadn't talked in 14 years, and she hadn't wanted to, and now she longed for a single word or sign of recognition from him. She watched him so intently that she jumped when the blood pressure cuff buzzed. For a moment she had thought his arm was moving, but when the blood pressure cuff deflated, all went still.
"We're here,"
she whispered anyway. Her mother gripped her hand more tightly, and Holly's fingers fanned out over her shoulder as if trying to soak up her pain. A piercing alarm from the monitor interrupted the peaceful ebb and flow of the violins. Even though Leo had known this would happen at some point, panic swept through her. She wanted to run to the door and call for help, but her mother didn't let go. Rapid footfalls approached, and a nurse came in, followed by a doctor. Neither asked any questions. One of them turned off the shrill alarm, while the other switched off the ventilator before murmuring, "Sorry for your loss," and quietly leaving the room. Leo's mother buried her face against her husband's unmoving chest and wept. Slowly, as if any jarring movement would disturb his peace, Leo slid her hand out of her father's and turned off the music on her phone. When silence fell, she latched onto Holly's hand, hoping she would keep her afloat in a sea of pain and grief. Later, she couldn't have said how long they stayed with her dad, what words they exchanged with the hospital staff, or how they got back home. The only thing she knew was that Holly stayed by her side through it all. Chapter 17. It felt strange not to check on Gil last thing in the evening. She had been his nurse for a year and a half and had shared his home for months. He'd been grumpy for most of that time, but never in a mean way. Somehow she had come to like him and his curmudgeon ways. She would miss him. She stood in the doorway of his room and stared at the empty bed for quite some time. Finally, she wiped her eyes, gave herself a mental nudge, and went in to pick up the empty wrappers and other trash the EMTs had left behind. Technically, her job as his nurse had ended, and she was free to go home, but she didn't consider it for even a second. Not before she had made sure Leo was okay, or at least as okay as she was going to get today. She put the remainder of the food the neighbors and the members of Gil's church choir had brought over into the fridge and tiptoed upstairs. A quick glance into Sharon's room showed her that she was asleep. The sleeping pill Holly had given her must have finally kicked in. Sharon had cried all the way home. By the time they had entered the house, she'd been so exhausted that Holly and Leo nearly had to carry her upstairs, yet she had still been too agitated to settle down. Holly quietly closed the door and continued on to Leo's room. No answer came to her knock. Hesitantly, she opened the door a few inches and peeked in. Leo's room was empty. For a second, fear surged through her veins. Had Leo gotten into her car and driven off, not knowing where she was going, just away from the empty bedroom downstairs and the memories it evoked? but then a light breeze brushed her cheek. The dormer window stood open. Holly knew instantly where Leo had gone. She crossed the room, climbed onto the desk chair, and stepped out onto the roof. Once her eyes